Hi, dear listeners. Here I am, Lida Bach for Movie Break with a new interview. And today I'm talking with director Michael Lokshin for his new film, Master and Margarita. And this, of course, is an adaptation of the great novel by Mikhail Bulgakov. Now, it's kind of difficult where to start because there's so much to ask about this film. It has been The release date has been pushed behind again and again because of multiple political issues mainly. But let's first go back a little farther. When did you first come across Bulgakov's novel?
I read it in school in Russia in the 90s. So when I was about 15 years old, that was one of my favorite novels. It wasn't like the curriculum that everybody had to read, but in the 90s was kind of like the peak of popularity of Bulgakov because he had been banned for so many years in Soviet times. Now, today, they don't read it in Russia anymore, I don't think, as a necessity in school. And then I reread this novel a few times already as an adult, and each time I would read it, it would strike me as almost a new novel. That's like the magic of it, really.
As you already implied, the novel is very critical. It was critical of the Soviet system, which was in power at the time that Bulgakov lived. You, in your film, applied it as something that could very easily be read as a critique of the current Russian regime or of any suppressive regime. Was that always your intention when making that film?
Well, when we were approached to kind of pitch on it, this was back in 2019, end of 2019, we had to find a way to make this movie relevant and resonate for today, because it couldn't just be a historical novel, even though this is a beloved novel and people just want to watch maybe about the 1930s in the past. But I wanted to make it as something that felt relevant for today's world, not just Russia, but just today's world in general. And the novel has many different themes in it. Like, it has many different storylines. We had to distill sort of what this movie would be about, because a movie has to be more, in my opinion, has to be more concentrated in its thematic kind of messaging than a novel. That's the beauty of literature, that it can go all over the place. So yes, of course, to answer your question, yes, of course, this was one of the main guiding sort of principles in adapting the novel, was to find that thematic resonance for today. But we didn't expect back then that it would become as relevant. You know, we were making this before Russia's full-scale invasion and before Russia became really totalitarian and censored, you know, all art really as today. And before the US and other countries have become where they are today, with also like some versions of censorship. So it was a different world that we were making. We were making it more as a cautionary tale. But sadly for the world, it has become more of a tale of reality.
How did it feel when you were making the novel into a film, and the political situation in Russia was getting more and more tense? Because even before the invasion of Ukraine, the political situation was tense for critical journalists, for LGBTQ people. How did that feel?
I hadn't been living in Russia like full time for many, many years. And so I came back to shoot this movie. But, you know, Russia back then, with all you say is true. But back then, I mean, in 2020 and 2021, was still very much part of the Western cultural world still, you know. Even in the film business, there's like Netflix making shows there. This movie was supposed to be Universal Pictures. There were a lot of co-productions. This movie was still possible back then. After Russia's full-scale invasion, this movie wouldn't have been possible. And exactly what you're talking about, the quelling of freedoms and the censorship that we felt back then was sort of like part of telling this tale. But at the same time, back then, artists were not in jail, you know? You could speak more or less freely about many things. There was social sort of freedom up until Navalny's really arrest, right? Like, then the political kind of dissent totally disappeared, but this was only end of 2021. So it was happening gradually, but after the war started, it went like full scale down into Stalin's times. We didn't expect it making this movie. We didn't expect, obviously, that it would become as relevant as it has become.
How did the casting process go? And were your actors and actresses at some point worried about how this film and the participation in it might negatively influence their career or even their life in Russia?
Mm-hmm. Well, the casting, yeah. I mean, again, since we shot this movie before the war and people were seeing it as an adaptation, they didn't know necessarily how we were taking the novel into maybe a bit more political than actually the novel is itself, even though the novel does heavily comment on, you know, on what truth is, on censorship in Stalin's Russia. It's not maybe as evidently political as the movie. But again, the movie is not just a political statement. It's quite a fantastical sort of movie that talks metaphorically around very different things. But coming back to the question, back then, there were even some artists who didn't want to participate in it because, and we got some cancellations because they kind of felt we were reading the script where we were taking it. But most were happy to. After the release of the movie, many of the actors had to make statements about the war one way or the other. Those that stayed in Russia, you know, they did feel some backlash from it.
To talk a little bit about also not of the political things that go on around the film, but also about the film itself.
Mm-hmm.
How did you find August Steele for this role? He plays a very Mephistophelian character, basically the devil.
Well, August was the first choice for this character, for Woland, who is based on Faustus Mephistopheles, and he luckily said yes. We always imagined this character to be a European and preferably a German actor because, you know, that's how he's described sort of in Bulgakov's novel, as having a German accent and being this elegant European that's the outsider to the Soviet world and kind of be the trickster and joker about it. And August just had that inherent wit and kind of like way of being that really felt perfect for this Woland devil joker character. Working with him was fantastic. We became sort of like friends during the time. He loved the shoot and he felt very comfortable, and he had read the novel before, so he knew the character quite well and responded right away in a positive way.
The film also, in its relation to the novel, could also be seen as speaking about religion in general. There are some interpretations of Bulgakov's work that think it's basically also a critique of the, well, suppression of religion in the Soviet states. And there has been this conflict of Russia being like very religious in some parts, and also then this kind of very state-focused Soviet regime. So those contrasting influences. How would you say, did you see the themes of religion and how did you deal with them?
Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many different interpretations of this novel, and scholars and readers, I think that's the beauty of it, can't really agree about some fundamentals about the novel. Some call it religious, some call it atheistic, some call it agnostic. There's so many different ways of seeing it because, like, the Christ character is very different than any biblical interpretation, and the story of the disciples and Pontius Pilate is very different than biblical interpretation. So for many, this is an anti-religious, actually, novel. And for some, it's religion just in the sense that it brought in the themes of Jesus Christ or Pontius Pilate back into Soviet society, which had repressed these themes for so many years. So, you know, I steer away from being an interpreter of the novel. That is not my sort of mission. I think there are great scholars and professors for this. But in the movie, I think the way that we touch on it and in a way to interpret your question is that what the Soviet state tried to do is kind of repress the idea of spirituality and truth. Like, we can even take it out of the word religion. You know, that's what Woland says when he comes to Moscow. He's like, he came to see what this new society that built atheism as a religion, how it actually functions. Like, he says, no society has ever done that before. And in that sense, what Bulgakov did was brought that conversation back in and said, you can't just repress these, like, inherently most important human themes from society, and this is what it will lead to. It will lead to kind of tragedy, right?
Yeah, also, Woland is wrong. It was not atheism which was the religion, but the state became the religion in the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
So that's not the same.
It's not the same, yeah. But atheism was proclaimed as a religion in the Soviet times. It was like...
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And famously, Bulgakov also put a fictionalized version of himself in the novel, and you seem to respond to that because the actor, as he's presented in the film, very much looks like the Bulgakov we see on photos, so you cannot miss the similarities.
Mm-hmm.
Did you also have it in mind to make him a semi-biographical version of Bulgakov, or was it more like just an optical play?
No, that was definitely the intent. I mean, it's not a direct, we don't take the direct biographical facts, but some of them do. It's like a fictionalized intersection between Bulgakov's biography and the master's story, right? If for those who know the novel, we don't know that much about the master from The Master and Margarita, but there are some similarities between his story and Bulgakov himself. So you can definitely see him as an alter ego, as are other characters in the movie or in the book as well, taken from Bulgakov's real life. So that was an intentional sort of way of thinking about how to build out that the protagonist story. You know, you mentioned that the actor Yevgeny Tsiganov started to look more and more like him. He doesn't actually in real life, but there's something about how he embodied the role where we really on set were looking at him and was like, oh my God, he actually does look like Bulgakov at this moment. But if you look at him now, he won't look like that. You know, it was something about the magic of acting.
Well, he morphed into Bulgakov by playing.
Yeah, he tapped into his spirit, yeah.
Then we have, of course, Margarita, who's the main female protagonist. Well, Bulgakov's portrayal of her is very much, well, positively speaking, it would be say it's very much in his time. You cannot help but miss that. She's almost always naked. There are two female characters and both are solely defined in their relationship to a man. It's actually called The Master and Margarita. And the only thing she really does is like worship the master. That's her role in the film. Did you think that this portrayal of women maybe was out of date or not correct, that maybe Bulgakov was wrong or conceived?
We tried to actually move away from that a little bit because in the last part of the movie, Margarita is actually a driving force and she's actually the one who's acting, is the one who's changing the world. She's actually like, you know, not just reactive, but she's actually the active protagonist of the last part of the movie. In Bulgakov's novel, she's very often like portrayed naked, as you saw. We moved away from that a little bit in like the ball scenes, etc., where like we didn't want her to be fully naked. So there were some changes we were making in that, but definitely that it's, you know, there is like an archaic sort of moment in that relationship, which seems from a different era. But that's also inherently what the novel is at the, you know, and that you can't really change that much.
Due to the nakedness, but also I think the political issues, you got an 18 plus rating, at least in Russia, which I think is extremely high for the film. I don't think it will be rated like that in any other country.
No, it wasn't supposed to be rated that way in Russia. There was a way of kind of like them making the audience smaller. So at first we were supposed to have a 12 plus rating. You know, there were many different ways that the censors sort of said, okay, this movie will come out, but it'll come out on a bad release date, which has like a low box office. And then also it will come out with an 18 plus rating so less people can see it, et cetera. So it's just ways of like soft censoring.
Still, the film did immensely well and was one of the most successful. Like we should mention that your last film, Silver's Gates, also did amazing, but that was more a far less, I would say, challenging film, you know. Then you were kind of the prodigy child of Russian cinema, you know, and now suddenly you are like the enfant terrible. How does it feel and how do you see your position now that the film is so heavily criticized by the state, but obviously loved by the people, like many go to watch it and maybe see it as one of the last bits of free speech they can assess?
You know, I was seeing myself back then as sort of like the doing movies that had relevance for both Russia and could also be international. But I mean, since Russia's full-scale invasion in Ukraine, I haven't been back to Russia. And I won't be going back and can't go back. So I won't be doing anything anymore connected with Russia until the regime really changes there, until the horrible war stops, right? And I don't really feel like I changed position. I feel like even in my first movie, there were some like themes, even though it was a very different, it was more commercial and, you know, kind of a little bit more mainstream movie, but it was still bridging the gap between Russia and the West because it was a Netflix movie being shot in Russia. So I don't see myself changing the position because that movie as well had some, I think, inherently humanistic values in it and anti-authoritarian or state kind of values that were talked about even in that movie in a more commercial way, less so than Master Margarita. But yeah, I mean, it was a big change in the sense of like I had to make a conscious decision after the war started that I wouldn't be able to go back to Russia or do anything in Russia once I was vocal about the war and supported Ukraine. That was a conscious decision, but I didn't see any other way, really.
When seeing the movie, we have those grandiose sets and also this architecture, which reminds us a lot of Soviet realism and Soviet brutalism. How many of those sets did you find on place, and how many did you create in studios and with CGI effects?
Yeah, the idea always was to sort of represent the authoritarian Soviet Stalin, a kind of system of repression through the visuals, through the architecture, etc. Not much from the 1930s architecture is left in Moscow. Like, there was this plan of building a totally new city, which would kind of be this anti-utopia or this utopia of the Stalin era. And if the war hadn't happened in 1941, probably that city would have been built, like the old city was being destructed, similar to what happened here in Germany when Speer was building the new Berlin. But not much of those buildings are left, so we had to build quite a lot of sets. And we were looking for a specific style of architecture from the mid-1930s, not the late Stalinist architecture, but that architecture in the 1930s that represented this idea of this, like, you know, almost, it was still a little bit from the avant-garde, but still had this anti-humanistic, anti-individualistic quality to it. So, like, for example, the building from the Writers' Union is a real building in Moscow. And then there's some buildings that were used in St. Petersburg that were from that stage. But many others had to be reconstructed in CGI and on sets.
So just because the time is running out, as always, we jump to the obligatory last question. Do you already have a new project you're working on?
Yes, I have two films I'm setting up, both in English language from now on, and not connected with Russia. One actually is a story about, and we'll see which one goes first. One is a story about 1946 and a way for me to maybe talk about my feelings of what's happening in Russia, what should be happening with the war criminals there through a different time era. And the other is a purely American movie, and then I'll see which one goes first.
So thank you so much for this interview, Mikhail Lokshin. By the time this interview is going to go out, you can see The Master and Margarita in cinemas, and if you have a lot of patience, also read Bulgakov's novel, of course.
Thank you.